Welcome to Keeping Your Together in a Stressed World with Michelle Post and Scott Grossberg. Each week, we explore down and dirty ways to stop awfulizing, catastrophizing, going down the rabbit hole, and moving through all the craziness that is happening right now. We're here to create a community of like-minded people as we give you tips, tricks, and techniques for keeping sane in an unhinged world. And now, here are your hosts, Michelle Post and Scott Grossberg.
Hey, everybody. This is Scott Grossberg, one of your co-hosts for the podcast, Keeping Your Shit Together in a Stressed World. And I'm here with my world-traveling, globe-trotting co-host, Michelle Post. Hello, Michelle.
Hello, Scott. Greetings from the Canary Islands.
The Canary Islands.
Yeah.
Isn't that where we used to bomb places for testing our airplanes?
Did we? I don't know.
For some reason, you know what? I could be wrong. For some reason, that just stuck out in my head, and I could be off kilter today.
I'm on Fuerte Verde, and it is like a crazy, wild desert land. So could be.
Well, I'm glad you're in the Canary Islands. I'm glad you are in an oasis and paradise, and life is complete. So speaking of complete, today's show is actually rather interesting because I've grown up with some of this stuff. What my earliest memories is having stomach aches before going to school or in stressful situations when I was a little kid. And how appropriate that today we're talking about the relationship between stress and your gut. The other thing, and we've talked about it many times on this show, is we've always said, trust your gut. And anytime, by the way, anytime I have not trusted my gut, I don't know about you.
Yep.
It has not gone well.
Yep.
Right? And despite all what your logical thinking is telling you, what your decision-making skills are going, spidey alert, right? All of that. Literally, if I don't trust my gut, things go haywire. So how ironic that we seem to say, trust your gut, and then we don't realize what your gut is telling you. We're not listening to it when it comes to our health or stress or other anxiety situations. And I'm sure you see it in your practice, right?
Mm-hmm.
From a mental health perspective.
Yes, there's somatic therapy is a whole form of therapy. We had Diane Bolinsky on before. We've had Christina Courtney on before with EFT. Like, somatic therapy is all trying to help people attune to their body and heal what their body is trying to say. So absolutely, I see it in my practice, and it needs to be cared for. Our gut needs to be cared for.
Yeah. So here's what I was thinking. And this comes again, we've talked about it on the show, so this shouldn't be a secret to any of our fan base. You know, right before I do a show, I historically have gotten very nervous. I can feel it's not, and by the way, it's not butterfly. There are no frickin' butterflies in my stomach. It's a weird feeling. Now,
gas. Doesn't feel like butterflies. It feels like gurgling, gassy, cramping.
I can't even tell you.
Sometimes nausea.
I can't even tell you that. So and by the way, since you brought that up, I remember when I was practicing law, we had a phenomenal attorney, young female attorney, who I thought had a wonderfully bright future. Absolutely stellar. Until I found out that she would go to court, and right before she would walk in the courtroom, she was throwing up into the trash can.
Aww.
Right? So this was not the realm for her. So fast forward to when I'm doing my shows, for example, or my public speaking. And I want that, by the way, I want my aim, my aspiration for today's episode is, as we're talking, to give tips and tricks for our listeners when they experience this adverse how else can you say it, but gut-brain connection.
Yeah.
And so one of the things that I've learned, for example, when I get this feeling, and it's, I know you've talked about the symptoms. For me, it's more a visceral feeling of dropping down into my, I can feel myself dropping down into my gut, into my stomach, and it's not pretty. Well, what I've learned to do also is reframe it. So I got so used for a while to calling it stage fright. You can call it butterflies in your stomach. You can call it performance anxiety. You can do all that stuff. Here's the interesting thing. Sometimes it's not that. And when I learned that excitement actually has the same physical symptoms.
It does.
As anxiety and stress in your gut, that excitement creates the same physical feeling. You can, our listeners, you can reframe this stuff. I'm telling you, it works. When you start getting that drop down feeling or that acid reflux or whatever it is that, you know, the variety of different things you can have, if you say, oh, I'm getting excited. Now, you may not like how you handle excitement. but, you know, one of our dogs, for example, and James Wanless, way back when one of our shows, James Wanless and I were talking about how to live like your pet, your favorite dog, right? Well, one of our dogs had happy pee. I don't know if any of you have seen it.
I've had dogs with happy pee. Yes.
Yeah, they come home and they get so freaking excited. And it's like, boom, right?
I think a lot of women I know have
I actually, by the way, and I know this is a little lower than gut, but it's all tied in. I had an actress once in one of my shows I was directing, and if she got surprised, and I've talked about it on the show before, right? As an actor, you do a show so many times and rehearse so many times, it gets boring. And so we as actors, we kind of play tricks on some of our fellow actors, not meaning to derail the show, but it's just subtle enough that the actor is like, oh my God, what the hell's going on now? And unfortunately, this particular actress, when she was on stage, would pee on stage if she got surprised. So we had to be very careful not to have that happen, right? So bottom line is, what I'm asking listeners to do is, you know, we've heard about gut-wrenching experiences, but when you get that situation where you're feeling nauseous or you have what we've characterized as butterflies in your stomach, there's a reason we're using that terminology. And you can go online, and it's everything from Mayo Clinic to Harvard, you know, these really well-established medical practices and facilities, they all talk about how your gastrointestinal tract is so sensitive to emotions.
Yes.
And it's not just anxiety, by the way. I know there are triggers for me physically that I need to be aware of. Again, as a kid, stomach aches all the time. And looking back on it now, I know it was stress related.
Well, I just find stress is an easy layperson's way to describe anxiety.
Right.
Anxiety is like sort of like depression is a clinical version of sadness.
Well, right? So this is great that you're bringing this up, because I will tell everybody, Michelle and I have this wonderful symbiotic relationship where she comes from the mental health field. And I look at some of this stuff and I broad brush it. I don't get into the finite details. I look at it and go, what the hell? You know, as a matter of fact, I've just been doing some research on borderline personality disorder based on some things that Michelle and I have been chatting about offline that we may turn into a show. I've been doing my research on that. We've all got them in our family, folks. And I'm starting to read all of these classifications and these diagnoses and these definitions. It's like, oh my God.
Yeah.
It's like, really? So from a mental health perspective, how do you look at anxiety? How would you define it for folks?
Well, anxiety is a class of types of mental health issues, such as post-traumatic stress disorder, all the phobias, which can be very specific phobia, you know, fear of spiders, fear of heights, fear of death, fear of whatever, fear of public speaking. That's all a phobia.
By the way, I want to interrupt you.
Uh-huh.
Here I've been working on my fear of spiders. We've talked about it on the show. I won't go into it. I've been working on it until I saw a camel spider.
Who is camel spider?
I just let everybody go look up a camel spider. Now, in reality, they're not spiders, but they're in the Middle East, essentially. And these things, these tank commanders have shown these things, and they're like the width of your shoulders. And they wake up with these things, and sometimes they're in bed with them, and it's like, oh, hell no. Right? This is where I do the Indiana Jones thing. You just bring out a gun and shoot it.
But they're in the Middle East and you're here. I thought maybe it was a spider you discovered in the gentleman's garden.
I actually took out a bee. I took out, remember, I'm the one that was raised with you take living things outside and set them free.
Yes, I know.
I have been doing that with spiders. I did it with a bee the other day that I got in the house. So rather than swatting them and killing them. So I'm working on it. So go back to your phobia thing.
Okay, so we've got phobias, post-traumatic stress disorder. We have panic disorder. We have anxiety disorder. We have acute stress disorder. So this is when an event happens, but it's such a new event that it hasn't turned into post. It's the first 30 days since a traumatic event. So all of these have anxiety in common, and they're all like post-traumatic stress disorder. Stress is a nomenclature for, you know, kind of the fight or flight system being activated. And when it becomes chronic and a diagnosable, you know, generalized anxiety disorder is another one. It's where you have a low grade level of anxiety all the time, or most of the time off and on for at least, I think it's a year. I think the year is the quality, but don't quote me on that. So these are all a class of anxiety. And when we're talking about the brain gut and stress and your gut, stress is sort of the reaction to normal life things. But when it becomes problematic or at a high level, you're moving into an anxiety disorder.
And here's why this is interesting to me in preparing for the show. And I certainly have done work on this because I do a lot of stuff with yoga and meditation and hypnosis and things like that, but never to the extent that I've done preparing for today's show. And it's very interesting. The fact that while we're talking about all this, the connection between your brain and your gut is actually two-way. And this is very important for our listeners to understand, because your digestive system and your nervous system all work together to send signals up to your brain, and the other way. So you can have anxiety and it affects your tummy, and you could have some bad food and suddenly it triggers something else. And there's this whole connection that I find fascinating. Between your enteric nervous system, your vagus nerve, and your gut microbiome. And and I want everybody to understand it's a highway. It's a freeway. It's a two-lane road. And I don't want everybody to think, oh, it's just if I'm having this reaction in my gut, it means I have anxiety. It could be you got something going on and you're registering it. Remember we talked about, or I talked about, I'm feeling a certain way. Maybe it's excitement. And when you reframe it, it changes things. Now, the other thing, and this would be fascinating to hear your response to this. I did some research with John Hopkins on what they call going with your gut. And they talk about the butterflies in your stomach, but they actually talk about a second brain.
Oh, yes. The gut brain.
The gut brain. And I had never heard this before.
In fact, do you know that the difference between so our brain, real quick fact, for those of you fact lovers out there, the brain has about 86 billion neurons in the human brain, but the stomach or gut area has 100 to 600 million neurons. So still not as many as billions, but it's called the gut brain because it has so many neurons. and we need to pay attention to it.
Well,
it's the gut brain.
And I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, we've got a problem here, excuse me, in the United States. I don't know if it's worldwide or not. Although I believe I'm looking here whether John Hopkins is talking about just the US or they're talking worldwide. You know, they've mentioned irritable bowel syndrome, for example.
Yes.
And the fact that 30 to 40% of the population has functional bowel problems at some point. You know, that's a big deal, and why everybody should be listening to this show and should be looking into some alternative ways that I'll talk about at the end here.
Another quick fact.
Yeah.
So while a billion, you know, billions compared to 100 to 600 million might not sound that much, like, oh, okay, we, you know, it's not that much. Do you know that the average ostrich or your friendly neighborhood Yorkshire Terrier has about an average 100 to 600 million neurons? So their brain, these animals' brains, have the same neurons as just your gut. That's according to some research out of Stanford.
Well, and you know, but again, going back to the show we did with James Wanless, look at how an animal lives.
Yep.
Now, yeah, you know, certainly dogs, at least I have one, gets nervous, right? Some of them are very anxious, but the reality is they are creatures of opportunity. They're very opportunistic. I don't believe for a minute that my pets sit around wondering why they're not a different pet. I don't believe for a minute that one of my pets goes, why am I not an eagle? Why am I not that raven? Why am I not the hawk in our backyard? Oh, look at the little bunny. I wish I was a bunny. They don't do that.
Wish they were a different dog, I don't think.
I don't think so. So this brings us to, again, at least with John Hopkins, they talk about the real solid effectiveness when it comes to gut-brain connectivity of the effectiveness of cognitive behavioral therapy and medical hypnotherapy. Now, I'm not for a minute going to talk about hypnotherapy other than to tell you folks there are lots of really good practitioners out there. Mm-hmm. And when we get into some of the tools, I think, that you can use to help you, you can go online to do it. But I'd love for you, Michelle, if you don't mind, just for a moment, because this is one of your modalities, is to go back and talk about what cognitive behavioral therapy is in general and how you might apply it to a brain gut scenario, if you could.
Right. Yeah. So briefly, CBT, as we call it, looks at your cognitions, your thoughts, and how your thoughts affect your biology, your physiology, your mood or emotions, and your behaviors. So by teaching you how to examine your thoughts and have balanced thoughts, it affects all these other areas of your physiology and your experience. And the second part of your question was
how does CBT in your mind apply to a brain gut connectivity scenario?
Mm-hmm, right. So because of the way that we interpret factors in our environment, either distortedly or not, it can affect, or even our physiology. Oh, there's my stomach. It must mean that I'm nervous. It must mean that something bad is going on. Maybe I need to listen to it. It's talking to me. Maybe I need rest or something soothing to eat. Or maybe I don't go down that dark alley because my gut just went off. So, but if you also think about two people in the same room, let's say Southern California, experiencing an earthquake, one person jumps up and screams, you know, maybe they're a transplant. They jump up and they scream, oh my God, it's a big one. We're all going to die. And they run out of the room. And the other one maybe has lived in California for a really long time. And they're like, what earthquake?
Well, we just had that happen. We had some people come out here for New Year's. I guess we're in April now, so it didn't just happen, but for New Year's, feels like just yesterday. You know, for New Year's, we had some family out here from Alabama, where they have freaking hurricanes and tornadoes.
They're
out here, and we had just been talking about an earthquake.
Yeah.
And the fact that we haven't had any.
Uh-huh.
And damned if we didn't have one. And they freaked out.
Yeah.
And it's like, but nothing's going to happen. It's an earthquake. And then I'm hearing about these earthquakes back east where they haven't had them before. And I'm in California. And it's like, I'm looking at the size of them. And it's like,
tiny.
That's nothing, right?
I know.
But context is important too.
Boat ride.
Because, well, except that their building codes are different than ours.
Yes.
So context also drives the anxiety.
Mm-hmm. Context, the way you're, and context is all about how you're interpreting an outside event. And that affects your gut, that affects your anxiety, that affects.
So this brings me to how could a listener, if they go to someone like you, for example, how would CBT be used to help them with perspective?
So we might, one of the things that you said is, what are you excited about instead of what are you scared of? That's a classic CBT reframe. So reframing the thoughts, we might look at, well, if they're catastrophic thinking, well, this might happen and I'm really worried about that. Okay, what's the percentage? That's maybe a catastrophic thinking. What's the percentage of likelihood that this thing is going to happen? And what do we know about how often that comes true? And maybe this is just a preparedness thing and you need to reframe on what does meet your safety standards, what does show you that you're safe and you're okay. So there's a lot of reframing of thoughts, for example, from scary, negative, intense thoughts into balanced, realistic thoughts. And that's a tool that's called like the automatic thought record, and teaching people how to analyze their thoughts.
So would you agree then that what we're talking about as far as one particular tool that someone like you could help them with is the ability to have the two brains talk to each other better.
Yeah. And with polyvagal nerve theory and this idea that behavioral therapy would be teaching people breath work to calm their nervous system down, which could be overactivated by their negative thinking. So we do both, change the thoughts and apply physical movement, exercise, stretching, breathing, calming exercises, calming routines, sleep hygiene. All of that stuff helps soothe your parasympathetic nervous system and calm you.
So I want to bring up one more tool since you're talking about the calming, because we're going to get into it. I've got like four things I want to talk to people about.
Oh, but good.
I do want to mention, I wasn't going to until you just brought it up, as far as calming the sympathetic nervous system and, you know, the vagal nerves and all of that, you know, emotional freedom technique, which is available if you go online and look at it, is tapping, for lack of a better way to put it. And I know it looks silly and I know it sounds silly, but I've used it. I used it post-surgery for the fear and the anxiety I was feeling after surgery, and feeling like my body had not only been violated, but the hopelessness you feel because I had no control, right? And it gets long and involved. I was using EFT. I'm using EFT right now for some other things. And there are so many wonderful tools online that, again, you're pushing pressure points that will help your body. And frankly, again, I'm the guy that broad brushes everything. And my training is in hypnotherapy and neurolinguistic programming. These are pattern interrupts. I don't care. I don't care whether tapping on the top of your head or at your temple actually presses a pressure point. That's icing on the cake. What it does is it reconfigures the narrative that's going on and causes you to be more mindful about the situation. And it's much like when I've talked about, my mind just went blank. The individual, it'll come back to me, that when he, you know, when a ghost comes after you, when a ghost chases you, you don't turn and run, you turn around and walk into it. And, you know, it's, again, when you've got anxiety, depression, fear, anger, these are all gut triggering events the idea, at least with EFT and even Ho'oponopono, which we've talked about on the show, is you walk into it. You say, hey, as long as I'm experiencing this, I might as well just admit, here's what's going on. Now, the other thing that I want us to be very careful of, and I think this is important, is the effects of stress are one thing. The effect of negative emotions are one thing, but there can be other triggers for your GI tract that are not emotionally based. So you've got all of those things, including bacteria, et cetera. I mean, we have some weird stuff, right? You can eat bad food. And I've said it before on this show, you know, one of the first things when you get up in the morning, if you're feeling a little off, it's not to initially go out and look for causes and despair and blame and targeting, et cetera, et cetera. It's, is it possible you just had a bad piece of pizza last night? You know, maybe something's not sitting with you. And so I want to remind everybody that your emotions, this is big, your emotions last for 90 seconds. If it goes beyond 90 seconds, then you're telling yourself a story that keeps it going. If it's that story that's going to affect your gut. Now, if in fact it's not the story you're telling yourself, there are things like Crohn's disease and autoimmune system, ulcerative colitis was one of the ones that I saw this morning. We've talked about IBS. We haven't talked too much about GERD, but a lot of people experience gastroesophageal, I always mess this up, reflux disease.
Okay, acid reflux.
We have, you know, people that have food allergies. So start identifying what is actually triggering some of this stuff. Because again, the two brains actually are talking to each other. Now, in the last, we've got about 5 minutes left of the show. Time flies when you're talking about your brain and gut. you know, I thought there were some things that I had written down that I thought would be helpful. And first and foremost is yoga. And not just any yoga, right? Oh. You can certainly go into it. Yoga is great for stretching. And by the way, if any of you don't think that yoga is a workout, you're too manly or too superhero like to do yoga, go take a look at some of the power yoga stuff. You know, I've done some of this stuff. If you're not sweating and out of breath by the end of it, you are not doing power yoga correctly. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about something called yin yoga, which is the ability to calm down. And it's very interesting because one of the things that I've been taught is, for those of you that do yoga, there's child's pose where you lay on your, basically on your stomach with your legs out, right? There's corpse pose where you're on your back, but your legs are out. This is where you have your legs bent. Now, interestingly enough, because of my knee surgery, I can't yet get on my knee to do that. So I was taught an opposite one where you still lay on your back, but you bring your knees up and you put a, you know, one of those stretching straps around your knees to hold them up. And you're basically in child's pose on your back. And here's the interesting thing. If you hold it for 5 minutes, that's a long time, folks. This is why it's yin yoga. It's the concept of holding a pose for a long time. The idea is to sit there and be very conscious and mindful of what your body's doing. And as you're going through, to keep asking yourself, where am I stressed? Where am I tense? Where am I contracting my muscles? You'll be shocked. I know the first two times I did this, it was like, oh my God, is it 5 minutes yet? Okay, I'm just going to, 2 minutes, I'm going to call it and we'll say it was five, right? I'm doing all of the monkey mind crap. But then you hit a point, kind of like doing the marathon where you hit the wall, right? You hit that point where you suddenly go, oh my goodness, my shoulders are tight. My lower back is tight. My glutes are tight. Oh my goodness, I can feel it in my neck. And as you start to consciously relax in this pose, you start realizing what your body is doing, including your gut. So one of the things I really urge listeners to look into is yoga. You can do it online. You can, by the way, for those of you that have mobility issues, there's even chair yoga that you can do. You don't have to get on the ground, but at least make sure you're doing it correctly. among the yoga concepts is to do yoga stuff and or Tai Chi, or something I practice is Qigong, that promotes digestion and targets that as an issue, right? It's not just yoga. It's not just Tai Chi or Qigong. Find the stuff that actually promotes digestion. The other thing as part of this is mindful meditation. Yoga is not always meditation.
Right.
And there are lots, you know, there are lots of things on, I've noticed that Headspace and Calm all have these things now you can watch online, watch on your TV. There are some wonderful meditations. Frankly, if you want to go get mine, go to my website, thinkingmagically.com. And there's a free meditation on there that you can use. Meditation is not something to use when there's a problem. It's to use before there's a problem. So that you don't notice the problem. It doesn't mean that you're not going to ever have problems, but the idea, it's kind of like putting WD-40 on a lock or WD-40 on a squeaky wheel, right? Yeah, you can wait for the wheel to squeak, but wouldn't you much rather lubricate the wheel so that it doesn't squeak in the first place? So there's that. Now, from a health food standpoint, I'm not a nutritionist. I give you that disclaimer right now. So check with your doctor or nutritionist, but there are prebiotics and probiotics. And I know, I can't remember what medication they put me on post-surgery, but I was actually told to go do probiotics because whatever this medicine does, it affects the bacteria, not in a good way, in your stomach, right? And so, you know, there is bacteria in our gut, in our stomachs, that's good for us.
Yes.
Right. We have to have it in there because it kills the bad stuff.
That's right.
And it helps us digest. So take a look at the prebiotics and probiotics stuff. Eat more greens, eat more fruits and vegetables, drink your water, by the way.
I had a nutritionist tell me, eat the rainbow, like eat all the bright colors, yellow, green, blue, pink, red, purple. Be conscious of eating the rainbow. Things should not just be brown and white.
Yeah. So I'll let you in on one of my little eating hacks. I used to do smoothies a lot. And I do exactly what you're talking about. It's making sure that there's that mix of the greens and the reds and the oranges and the yellows and the greens and all that stuff. I repeated the greens because I put a lot of greens in there. I even put almonds in there. I put honey in there. And so, you know, to take a look at what you're doing for gut health from an eating standpoint.
Yes.
And then finally, do you have some bad habits that are contributing to this suboptimal gut brain communication? Are you smoking? Are you doing drugs that aren't prescribed? You know, are you doing things that are contributing to a stressful situation to begin with? And don't tell me, by the way, that these bad suboptimal habits are helping you be stress-free. And I know, but, you know, we could do a whole show on difference between a habit and an addiction. I know that some of you think that this is helping you. So what's one more drink? What's one more cigarette? What's one more overeating? Yeah. And the reality is you may want to revisit that. So those are four quick little tips that I had to help you understand the equal opportunity treatment between the two brains.
Yes, I love it. What you just said, Scott, about analyzing self-care versus self-indulgence, a key thing, a takeaway in terms of managing stress and your gut and your brain health is, are you engaged in behaviors that help you escape the life you have? Or are you engaged in behaviors and things that you're doing to create the life that you want, right? So if you're drinking and smoking to escape the life that you have, that is not the same as savoring a glass of wine once in a while over a great conversation, which is creating maybe the life that you want, right? We just had Maria on with mindful consumption couple sessions ago.
Yeah.
So revisit that if you're having trouble with not really mindfully consuming.
All right. We've come to the end of our show. Hopefully that there have been some stuff in here that have triggered some things for you guys to think about and contemplate next week.
Yeah.
Fun topic. We're going to talk about adventure therapy and finding courage and resilience in outdoor challenges.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Please remember to like, share, and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. Remember to share this. It helps us a lot, by the way. Even if you just like it and you haven't liked before, quick reminder, we haven't talked about this in a while, that we do have a Facebook group for the podcast that you can be on, where we share when the show is available and links, and you can always ask us a question like that. Until next time, think and eat well. Bye-bye.
Bye.
You've reached the end of another episode of Keeping Your Together in a Stressed World with Michelle Post and Scott Grossberg. If you like our show, we'd love for you to subscribe, rate our broadcast, and leave a review. The podcast is for general information only and not intended to be legal or mental health advice, nor the formation of a lawyer-client, nor therapist-patient relationship. Stay tuned for our next episode, and thank you for listening.